The United Nations, U.S. lawmakers, you name it, have been calling this ethnic cleansing for several weeks now.
The State Department designates Myanmar's actions against Rohingyas as ethnic cleansing. It's Thursday, November 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. You're part of the program. Be sure to join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, we'll meet a billionaire from Vietnam who helps out Americans. Homeless people in Delhi struggle with the city's pollution. And over the river and through the woods, Americans celebrate Thanksgiving. That's all coming up on today's VOA Asia. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has said that the crisis in Rakhine State in Myanmar has become ethnic cleansing of Rohingya Muslims. What does that term mean, and how will it affect the United States' response to the new democracy in Myanmar? To discuss that, I'm joined by foreign policy editor Aru Pandey. Aru, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the term ethnic cleansing, first of all, just for people who don't know, can you define that in is what it is? Is it a legal term or is it a diplomatic term? What exactly is it?
Well, it's really not. It's not a legal term. It's as a State Department official told reporters today, it's not defined in the context of either international law or domestic law, which is very important. So basically, the term doesn't really have any legal implications. It's not like genocide or crimes against humanity, which both of those terms carry international legal consequences. That said, the reason that this is so important is because the United States and Tillerson has been pressed on taking a stand on this issue. We've heard strong statements, but the United Nations, U.S. lawmakers, you name it, have been calling this ethnic cleansing for several weeks now. And as late as last week, when Tillerson was in Myanmar, meeting with leaders there, he was asked, are you going to call this ethnic cleansing? And he said, well, we're still looking at it. So yes, it's important. It's an important statement to make that yes, the United States has declared it that. In terms of the consequences or the legal implications, there are not.
This comes at a time when some folks on Capitol Hill are considering imposing or reimposing sanctions against Myanmar, doesn't it?
Right. And that's the key here. When State Department officials were asked about this today at a briefing as to what this means, what's the point of this? They said this will put additional pressure on Myanmar, on the military forces there, and also they called for a probe and investigation to what's going on. The sanctions part in the statement today, Tillerson also said he mentioned the possibility of targeted sanctions, and that's important. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have called for sanctions. There's currently legislation that is under consideration to bring sanctions against Myanmar for what they call atrocities that are going on there. But Tillerson and the State Department have been quite clear they don't want to see broad sanctions against Myanmar and the government. What they would rather see, what they would rather consider, or lawmakers consider, are targeted sanctions against individuals.
Because sanctions, the United States for a long time had sanctions against the former ruling military junta in Myanmar, and now that they are a, shall we say, a nascent democracy, they're kind of putting their democracy together. We don't want to, as I understand it, the Secretary is saying they don't want to impose broad sanctions that would hurt efforts to form a democratic government.
Right. And that was also mentioned in the sense that the United States wants to support this, like you said, this new civilian government, this new transition. And they fear that if they put broad sanctions on Myanmar, it'll take that country back to what it was under that military rule. So they don't want to do that. They want to give Myanmar the space. And also, they don't want to affect its economy in that way, because that is key to the growth of that country and the government. And so they want to make sure that they give them that space to grow economically. And they fear that broad sanctions, in a sense, punishing Myanmar, would take that country back to where it was before 18 months ago, 2 years ago.
VOA foreign policy editor Aru Pandey. Aru, thank you.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, says that the hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees who have fled to Bangladesh have been deeply traumatized by their ordeal. Speaking in South Korea Wednesday, Grandi said that he had not seen the kind of trauma evident in the Rohingyas since the Central African crises in the mid-1990s.
Because I found this was a population that had almost no more response, very passive. You know, you almost felt that there was no emotion left. Everything had been drained by this violence. This is such a symptom of trauma, in my opinion. And I've hardly ever seen it. Perhaps I've seen things like this in the 90s in Central Africa, you know, those big movements. We haven't seen this type of trauma for a long, long time.
More than 600,000 Rohingya have fled Buddhist-majority Myanmar since late August. Grandi visited the refugee camps in late September and said the UN stands ready to help people in need, regardless of their ethnic or religious background. For more, visit our website, voanews.com. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page, VOA Asia. These are among the top Asian stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. sanctions terror designation increase pressure on North Korea. U.S. Navy plane with 11 aboard crashes into Pacific, 8 people found. Philippines to extradite priest accused of molesting U.S. boys. Asian countries quicken economic ties by playing down human rights. And China says it respects Mugabe's decision to resign. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. In the Indian capital, New Delhi, winter was once a season of cool, crisp winds, bracing walks and picnics under a blue sky. But as the city remained enveloped in gray smog this month, authorities rolled out a series of emergency measures to combat deadly levels of air pollution. As Anjana Pasricha reports, the toxic air has improved slightly, but it is still hitting the most vulnerable the hardest.
Thousands of homeless people in the Indian capital are among the hardest hit victims of the city's severe air pollution, which peaks in winter. Living on pavements, they have no escape from deadly pollutants such as construction dust and vehicle emissions that cause a variety of respiratory ailments.
I used to sleep on one sheet, but now I have to use it to cover myself. When I wake up, I have a problem breathing.
The falling temperatures prompt some to go to shelters set up by the Delhi government for the homeless. But Delhi's toxic smog has still left its mark on many.
I get breathless, then I have pain. I cannot walk properly. That's the reason I don't go to work.
The doctors tell me my lungs have been damaged. That is why I have breathing problems.
Even with the smog and the colder air, many shun the shelters, finding the bedding ill-maintained.
In the shelters, the blankets sometimes have bugs, tiny white insects, and so they prefer to sleep outside to escape being bitten by them. They also get very congested, so they prefer it in the open.
It is the second consecutive year that pollution levels in New Delhi have spiked to 30 times the safe limit set by the World Health Organization. Doctors have advised city residents to even avoid outdoor walking when the air quality is hazardous. But for many of the homeless, staying inside can be difficult. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Happening now in Asia, Pope Francis will meet with Rohingya Muslim refugees from Myanmar in Dhaka when he visits Bangladesh next week. The Vatican says that Francis, who has repeatedly spoken out over the persecution of the religious minority, will meet with a small group of Rohingyas December 1st. The Pope will spend 3 days in Myanmar, where he will have a private meeting with the head of the country's army. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Thursday. Qiu Huang's family had everything in Vietnam. He owned a hotel, he had a car, food, and money. But all that changed with the end of the Vietnam War when Huang and his family fled to the United States. There he worked several jobs just to survive, but eventually he became a billionaire in his new country. As Elizabeth Lee tells us, when devastating floods hit California and Texas this year, Huang found a way to give back to his new home.
Music has a way of bringing comfort and normalcy. That's the case for retiree Sang Trang and his wife. Floodwaters forced them to flee their home more than 8 months ago.
2 days after the flooding, when the water receded, I came home and found everything damaged. I felt so sorry for myself, as I'm not working anymore, and I do not know how I could afford stuff.
Elizabeth Arredondo and her family were forced out of their home for 2 months.
It made me really sad to think that we no longer had anything.
This entire neighborhood was underwater. Most of the residents who live here are low-income immigrants from Vietnam and Latin America.
14,000 people in San Jose had to evacuate from the flood. But help came when San Jose's mayor received a phone call from Qiu Huang.
He said, I'm in for $5 million. But his mandate was clear and it was perfect. It's exactly what we needed. No strings attached, but every dollar was going to go to the victims, and it did.
Huang also donated $5 million to flood relief in Houston when Hurricane Harvey hit.
We have to be grateful to the United States of America, to the people who allow us to come into the country to be successful. So now this is the time we pay back.
At the end of the Vietnam War, Huang and his family fled to Los Angeles as refugees.
In Vietnam, we had everything. I own a hotel, I have a car, I have a house, things like that. But when I left, I have nothing left. You get it? And so we must do our best in any circumstance or any situation. We have to think how to survive.
Huang survived on $1.25 an hour, working at Abbott Labs and other odd jobs. Eventually, he founded his own blood plasma company that included 11 centers in the U.S. He expanded into China and built Shanghai RAAS, becoming the company's majority shareholder. But the Chinese blood plasma business has been riddled with controversy. And for Huang, success came with a price.
In this kind of blood business, we have competition everywhere.
He says his competitors tried to discredit him.
They tried to say, oh, this is our product is bad. This is that China product. So this is the kind of thing I tell you, I hate it.
Huang says these accusations are wrong and upsetting, so he is focusing on other business ventures and plans to continue helping people like he did in San Jose, where Huang's donation not only helped flood victims pay for temporary housing.
We also were able to use that funding for car donations, for car repairs, for household items.
Huang's donation helped Trang buy another car so he can perform his music in his community. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, San Jose.
Coming up, we'll see how Americans are getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, startup founders, investors, and tech leaders from around the world are heading to Hyderabad, India for the 8th Annual Global Entrepreneurship Summit, which is co-hosted by the United States and India. Ivanka Trump, an advisor to President Donald Trump, and his daughter will join Prime Minister Narendra Modi in kicking off the 3-day event. which will focus on women in business. This is VOA Asia. It is a simple but startling statistic. One in four people around the world will have a mental or neurological disorder at some point in their lives. But dealing with mental health issues is so much easier if they are caught early. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us that is the thinking behind a new method using virtual reality to gauge mental health.
You're not there.
This young man is navigating a potentially stressful situation.
It's actually really good.
At a schoolroom cafeteria, these boys encounter bullies and potential friends, forcing them to navigate through all kinds of social situations.
The first guy, he was a bit weird.
He didn't like it.
No, because it was like, how many seats
were
there?
Exactly.
That one seat.
The way students deal with these situations can help psychologists identify those who have some mental problems.
So, for example, there's one interaction where a boy is sitting at a table with a bag, and as the student, the adolescent, approaches, the boy puts the bag on a seat and says, "You can't sit here, I'm waiting for someone." And what we found and what we're really interested in is how adolescents perceive those interactions completely differently.
No surprise, there are a million ways to respond to a situation like this.
So some young people will perceive that interaction as really quite threatening and anxiety-provoking and feel that they're disliked by the boy sitting at the table, whilst other young people will perceive it that the boy is having a really bad day.
The whole goal is to make these kinds of psychological assessments comfortable and even fun.
When we began to use tablet computers, the kids loved it and were much more engaged. And then when we've introduced virtual reality, we literally now have kids queuing up to have a go, because it's something that they relate to in their daily lives and that they enjoy, and that seems like fun.
Doctors who have reviewed the assessments say they work and are a big help in diagnosing more students more quickly. But they also say they need to be administered with the help of a therapist in a controlled environment. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
So how do you walk? Oh, just how you walk forwards.
This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korea condemned its U.S. terror listing as a serious provocation Wednesday, warning that sanctions would never force it to abandon its nuclear weapons program. That response came shortly after China also rejected as wrong new U.S. sanctions that targeted Chinese companies doing business with the North. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for the top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. Right now, you could probably reach into your pocket and tell whether you've grabbed coins or your keys because of the way that your nerves send signals to your brain. Now, as Faith Lapidus tells us, researchers in California have developed a robot with a similar level of tactile sensitivity.
People don't always need to see an object to know what it is, and neither does this robotic gripper. Developed by researchers at the University of California, San Diego, these fingers are made of flexible pneumatic chambers that are controlled by air pressure. Sensors embedded in the silicone rubber skin of each finger provide information about when the digit is moving and coming into contact with objects.
And this very much mimics our own skins, where you'll find all of our sensors, all of our nerve endings appear on the surface on our skin and allow us to understand how we're interacting with the world, as well as how our body is moving about itself.
Roboticist Michael Talley says the data generated by the sensors are transmitted to a control board, and artificial intelligence and machine learning help the robot adjust to its environment.
In particular, we wanted to emphasize with this gripper that you could handle delicate objects like a light bulb and apply the torques necessary to screw that in or unscrew it. But we've also demonstrated, picking up eggs or interacting with a variety of daily objects that you might see, things around here in the lab, for example.
As robots move increasingly from manufacturing tasks to interacting directly with people, the UCSD engineers say their soft robot technology will allow the machines to safely handle a much wider variety of situations. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Today is the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States. It's a day that is centered around a big meal, usually with your family. The holiday dates to 1621, when the Plymouth colonists and the Wampanoag Indians shared an autumn harvest feast that is acknowledged as one of the first Thanksgiving celebrations in the colonies. Later, U.S. President Abraham Lincoln designated the last Thursday of November to be the Day of Thanksgiving, after the Union Army had defeated Robert E. Lee and the Confederates at Gettysburg. Franklin Delano Roosevelt later moved it to the fourth Thursday in November in order to stimulate the U.S. economy during the Depression. Nowadays, it's a day to give thanks and enjoy great food and time with family, and it's also the start of the Christmas shopping blitz. VOA's Korean service visited a grocery store just outside Washington to explain how some people are preparing for the big day. Brian Allen narrates their story.
More than 50 million Americans are expected to travel during this Thanksgiving, most to spend the holiday with family and friends.
So this year we're going to have our family come in from Morgantown, West Virginia, and Wednesday night my wife flies in from Iceland, so we're going to be cooking all night Wednesday and all early morning Thursday. We're going to have about 11 or 12 kids in our house with four adults, so it's going to be quite a party.
In advance of the holiday, which is celebrated every year on the fourth Thursday of November, grocery stores are crowded with customers stocking up to prepare for the big feast.
So far, just the produce and things like that, so I still need to go and get some of the stuff to make the pies and ingredients for that, so the baking section. Oh, yes. I do not shop close to Thanksgiving. It's too stressful. So many people.
At the center of Thanksgiving dinner is the turkey. 45 million are sold every Thanksgiving season. That is about 18% of annual turkey consumption on one day. Turkey and many of the traditional side dishes on a Thanksgiving menu are sold here at a Wegmans food market.
This is an item that has all your components to Thanksgiving, your stuffing, your butternut squash, your mashed potatoes, your honey brines, roasted turkey, cranberry sauce, everything that you need for one person. So we bump that quantity up to two, as well as three.
According to the American Farm Bureau, the average cost of a turkey dinner for 10 people in the U.S. is just under $50. For VOA's Korean service, Brian Allen, VOA News.
And one thing that Brian did not mention about Thanksgiving traditions, it's also a day for National Football League games. And later today, the Detroit Lions will take on the Minnesota Vikings, the Dallas Cowboys face the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Washington Redskins take on the New York Giants. The 2017 installment of Thanksgiving Day Football features a triple header for the 12th consecutive season. The tradition goes all the way back to 1925, when a crowd of 36,000 watched the Chicago Bears play the Chicago Cardinals to a scoreless tie at Wrigley Field. This year, the Lions will play their 78th Thanksgiving Day game, dating back to 1934. For the Dallas Cowboys, it will be their 50th Thanksgiving Day since 1966. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us on the web at voanews.com. Let us hear from you. You can log on to our VOA Asia Facebook. You can also send us an email. Our address, voaasia@voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Dave Magnus. We want to give some shouts out because we're thankful for you being here. The voice of Chang Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chang Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks for listening. Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Media Biz Radio in Singapore. Chiang Mai University Radio FM 100 at Chiang Mai University in Thailand. And the University Radio of Hat Yai University, FM 101.25 in Thailand. Thanks again for being with us. Thanks also to our social media maven. That would be Skylar Ogden. You can catch her in business segments throughout the week. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Jim Stevenson is your normal host. And also thanks to Ira Melman. Thanks also to our interns for helping us put this program together. I'm David Byrd in Washington.